So Paul is at Ephesus now. He's on his third missionary journey, and he's going to spend a lot of time in Ephesus teaching and preaching and convincing and persuading different people. And, of course, last week we saw where there was that those group of certain disciples that was following after the baptism of John. This is, we said before, this is about 55 A.D., Jesus, we believe, passed away. We believe 29 A.D. John the Baptist was killed before Jesus was crucified. So this has been some number of years. Most likely these men did not get the teaching from John, but from John's disciples that had learned these things. But they knew nothing of the Holy Spirit, and they did not know the baptism for forgiveness of sins. And we see Paul works with them. We talked before that they was almost Christians. You can be an almost Christian and not a true Christian, and we see, but they had an open heart. And when Paul expounds to them from the Scriptures, most likely they didn't have the New Testament, but from the Old Testament, and they were Jewish, and so they came and they said they believed. And it said in chapter 7, there was about 12. Talks about him boldly speaking. Where does Paul go to when he goes to a city? What's his first place to stop? To the synagogue, right? Because you would think there was Jews gathered there, and if they're looking at the old law and they're examining the old law said many times, back when God talked to Adam and Eve, he made the promise, the prophecy through to Eve that through her lineage, one would come and save the world. And we see that as we go down and down through the Old Testament, through the prophecies. He would reason with them, but they would dispute him. They was hard-hearted. They wouldn't want to listen to those things. They didn't want a spiritual kingdom. They wanted a physical kingdom like David had. You know, God never wanted to have a earthly king, did he?
No.
The tribes was loosely, they did not have a strong federal government. If you think about it, the government that God set up for Israel was not a strong federal government, okay? It was different than what we had today. You go back to the colonies, they didn't have a strong federal government. In fact, they was afraid of a strong federal government. If those founding fathers would come back today, I think they'd be surprised to see what we have morphed into. But anyway, he goes on and he goes to a school of Tyrannus, and he teaches there for about 5 hours every day. Also in verse 11, it talks about they would take handkerchiefs, they would take napkins that Paul had touched, and they would go out and by having those, it would heal people. Can you imagine? And we said this before today, all the problems, diseases, and things that we have in this life with the cancer and those type of things, and heart problems, and just physical problems. And if there was a place today we could have a napkin or a handkerchief or an apron that would heal somebody, and Paul didn't do it. It was to confirm that what he was saying was true. They didn't have the New Testament to get up back and look at every day, but it would confirm that what he was saying was from God and that Jesus was the Christ, and if they would believe that, they would have their forgiveness of sins. And then we go on over in chapter 19, and we see that there's these Jews there, vagabond Jews, those exorcists. And we see that they start exorcising in the name of Jesus or the name of Paul. And what does that evil spirit say to them when he comes out, that man? I know Paul. I know Jesus. But I don't know you. They was trying to use, if they had been successful, think about this. If they had been successful dealing the way they was doing things, would they needed to use that name of Jesus? Or Paul? No, they wasn't successful. And that man beats them up. That man with the evil spirit beats them up, and they fall out of the house. They run out of the house. And when that happened, what was the effect on the people at Ephesus?
Fear.
And what did the people do? It said in verse 18, many that believed came and confessed and showed their deeds. And then in verse 19, this city, Ephesus, was known for what great temple?
Diana.
And how did the worship of Diana get started? They claimed that this rock fell from the skies. It was a meteorite, okay? And they thought that it was a god. It was from the gods. The pagan world at this time, what was they into? What did they worship? At Athens, when Paul goes to Mars Hill, what does he see?
Idols.
Is idols anything new?
No.
No. Back there in Egypt, did the Egyptians have idols?
Yes.
In fact, when the Israelites came out, Egypt, and when you see the wanderings, they even had problems with idols, didn't they? They didn't leave those idols back in Egypt. But then Athens, you know, Paul talked to them about, there was even a statue to the unknown God. They didn't want to leave anybody out. Okay? So now they're in Ephesus. We talked about the temple there of Diana. It was almost 2 acres. Historians tell us it was 80,000 square feet. It also tells us, you know, we think we have sanctuary cities today. It was a sanctuary city because if you had created a great sin, if you was a murderer or you had committed great sins, whatever you can think of would be a great sin, if you got to that temple, guess what? The law could not touch you. You were secured, okay? So what type of people would be at that 2-acre building? Would it be people that you want to be associated with? No, no. So we think today we have new things. Man is not any different today than what he was in all time. But look at, so they 50,000 pieces of silver. This was their books on sorcery. If there's 50,000, if these books are 50,000 pieces worth, 50,000 pieces of silver, where was they buying them at? Was they buying them in Corinth? Or buying them in Jerusalem? Or buying them in Alexander? They was probably buying them in Ephesus. People were selling these. People would come visit Ephesus and you'd have these books. And also we're going to see too, they made little shrines, silver shrines of Diana. And you would buy those things. And take those things because that's somebody you would worship because Diana fell from heaven. She's from the gods. But in verse 20, through all that terrible things, it says, so mightily grew the word of God and prevailed. And basically, it was through the preaching of Paul, verbally. They didn't have the Bible. It was with him referring to the old scriptures, the prophecies. But many people was being convinced when they saw the evidence. That's what it was. And then we talked because verse 23. In that same time there arose no small stir about that way. That way is the scriptures. When Paul's teaching people there at Ephesus, won't they have questions?
Yes.
Won't they have questions about Paul? Go back to Psalms 115. When Paul's there teaching them, in that city, people's going to have questions. Well, Paul, if you're saying Jesus is Lord and God is supreme, what about the temple here? They're proud of that temple. They're proud of the economic gain that Ephesus benefited from the temple. And in verse 1 of Psalms 115, I would think he would go there and say, now unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but unto thy name give glory for thy mercy and for thy truth's sake. Wherefore should the heathen say, where is now their God? But our God is in heaven. He hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. Now listen to this next few verses. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of man's hands. They have mouths, but they speak not. Eyes have they, but they see not. They have ears, but they hear not. Noses they have, but they smell not. They have hands, but they handle not. Feet have they, but they walk not. Neither speak they through their throat. That they make them are like unto thee, so is everyone that trusteth in them. O Israel, trust thou in the Lord. He is their help and shield. Has through time, has God showed his power?
Yes.
Through his word, has he not spoke? What keeps creation running?
He spoke creation into existence.
You know, if we have a fire, that fire, if we don't keep putting wood in it, it goes out, doesn't it? What about the sun? You think the sun is just, what replenishes the sun? You ever thought about that? God replenishes the sun, doesn't he? And those type of things, in this harvest, in this season. You know, there is this idol, and can it walk? Over Isaiah 44, Isaiah makes the point, you take this wood, this big tree, and you're going to make an idol out of it, but what do you do with part of it? You burn it. You use it to burn food, to stay warm. If this piece of wood is so much deity, so much God, why would God allow itself to be burned, to be consumed? Okay, but in verse 23, there's not a small stir about it. Because in verse 24, there's a guy named Demetrius. And what was Demetrius?
Silversmith.
And what's he making?
Little idols of Diana.
Out of what?
As he used to.
Huh? What?
Not as much money as he used to.
Okay, yeah. You know, Paul's there 2 years. And as these people, and we're going to see here in a few verses, did Paul go to the temple and blaspheme the name of Diana?
No.
He just teaches, right? And if people have an honest heart and they see what's going on, they're going to obey. He made silver shrines, it says. And in verse 25, it says, made no small gain. Business was good. If you had your license, and they probably had controlled how many people could do the creating of these little shrines, right? If everybody could do it, then, you know, people would compete with somebody. Say, you know, that you wanted the price of $100 for this shrine, but if everybody could do it, that price could keep dropping, going down. So you would kind of control who could do this. Now, in verse 25, so he sees his business going down, as Austin has said. So if you're a business person, and for whatever reason you see your business not as good, what do you do?
You look around, what's the cause?
You go to your other people that's in the same business as you are, right? And you try to find out, is your business down? What's going on here? You know, are we doing something wrong? Is there some new technology we're not doing? You know, Andy Hornback when he worked over in southern Indiana, was in the molding business. And one day, and he went in business for himself, and one day he showed me this machine he had in his garage, and he could program that, and it would cut the mold just exactly the way it should be. What had been done by hand and would take many hours, it was like a laser thing. That was 20 years ago, and I don't know what the advancements is now, but he showed it to me. It was just wondered what used to take hours and hours for one man to do could be done very, very simple, okay? And in the verse 25, he asks, sirs, you know that by this craft we have our wealth. They wasn't making a living to get by to provide food and shelter. They was creating wealth, okay? They might have had a home in Ephesus and maybe another vacation home and wherever or whatever, but they was living pretty well. And they say, you see in here that not alone in Ephesus, but throughout all Asia, this Paul, He has persuaded and turned away much people, saying there's no gods made with hands. Well, Psalms 115, David wrote back there many, many years before that there's no gods made with hands, okay? And then he talks about their craft being put out of order and going away, in danger of being their occupation, if Paul continues, there's no occupation making silver. They need to make something else, silver trinkets or whatever else, but they don't want to do that. And also, but also the temple of the great goddess Diana shall be despised. Okay? Because Paul was talking about there's no gods made with hands. Okay? And her magnificence should be destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worship. Okay? There probably was trinkets being sold in Rome. Okay? There was trinkets probably being sold in Alexandria, Egypt, wherever. It was a great business. That's all going to come to an end. Now, in verse 28, when they hear these things, what was their reaction? When you think, for whatever reason, your occupation is going to be destroyed or be gone, does that not get your attention, David?
Well, you know, I mean, it just seems, reading it, the focus is on the little idols that are being made and the loss of money. But, you know, if you look at 28, though, it's also like our culture is being insulted. And our religion, our beliefs are being insulted. And so there's a money aspect to it, but there's also like a social pride aspect to it also. Because, you know, their reaction is, great is Artemis of the Ephesians, which is translated Diana. And so, you know, and of course the focus is Paul, that this guy is doing this. He's hurt us in our pocketbook. But he's also insulting our culture.
Mm-hmm. Now,
that tends to get people.
Was they over emphasizing the effect it was going to have?
Well, I don't think they were. Were they over emphasizing it? No, I don't think they were.
Was it affecting other businesses? Was it affecting agriculture? Was it affecting? They've come together for one reason here.
Right.
It was because of their little occupation they had.
I mean, I guess to the extent that, I mean, you raised kind of a good point, to the extent that they truly believe that they derive their blessings from Diana, then if we're not giving Diana the honor that she deserves, then maybe it will affect all this.
But was it causing the people that produce food, was their business going down?
I don't know.
Well, yeah, people have to eat every day. Was it causing people that creates buildings for people to live in? You know, there's people still need somewhere to live. I think it was very narrow. It was very narrowly focused on their selfish wealth here.
Well, I mean, that could be true. But, you know, just like we're seeing in our own culture right now, one aspect of the economy kind of affects the other aspect, too. So.
There's no doubt there was benefits of people coming to the temple, spending money in the city, taking things in the city. But they're going to lose their, if Paul, and he's successfully done this for 2 years, people would come to Ephesus, he'd talk to them, and they go to other places, right? And when they'd go to other places, they'd say, you know, this Paul, and by the way, you know, Titus over here or some other, they had an apron that Paul had or a handkerchief, and it confirmed what Paul was saying was true, okay? And they threw all those books away that they was doing. So what's happening is Paul changing. Let me ask you this. Does Christianity change the culture?
Yes.
Christianity changed the culture. Was Paul changing the culture in this area?
Yes.
Yeah. Does Christianity change the culture for good or for bad? You know, it is unbelievable in this country right now. What is going on? Good is being called evil, and evil is being called good. Have we ever heard that before?
Yes.
Does the scriptures ever talk about that?
Yes.
Yeah. You know.
Woe to those.
The other day, one of the squad, I forget who she was, one of the squad members in Congress said, how do we know what the founding fathers was really thinking? And somebody said, get the Federalist Papers and you can see what they was thinking. You know why she said that? Go back and look, because they might have not had everything perfect as far as God goes, but they was religious. John Adams said, a Republican form of government is only so good as if the people have a religion. Think about that. And we're not a democracy. Think about that neither. We're a Republican government. We elect people and they make decisions. If we had a democracy and everything was decided by vote, we get on our TVs and somebody says, okay, yes or no, do you want this or not? And we plug a button. Is that a good form of government for a democracy? Because the majority makes the decision. But anyway, let's go on here. But anyway, here we are. Christianity changes cultures. Now, in verse 29, and they start saying, great is Diana of Ephesus, great is Diana of Ephesus. It said in verse 29, the whole city was what? Filled with what? Even now, and especially a few years ago, all the riots on different cities, a lot of people was rioting. Do they know why they was rioting a lot of times?
No.
They was just a mob, right? It says they're full with confusion. Now, who do they catch?
Gaius.
Was that Artaxerxes? My pronunciation, it's not very good. Men of Macedonia, Paul's companions. Did they know that these was Paul's companions? Yeah.
That's why they
rushed him into the theater. And they're claiming, great is Diana. Was they going to have like a little discussion with these guys and try to find out what they was talking about?
They're just going to yell.
Was they going to do these guys danger?
Possibly.
You get in a mob? We can see that from the last few years ago. You get in a mob, is there innocent people sometimes get caught up?
Yes.
And you say, this is not right? They don't want to hear that, do they? They want their own way. Okay, now, Paul wants to go. And can you imagine Paul having companions with him, who's there with him, who's helping him preach the gospel, and they're captured or taken into the theater? Paul, who's been really doing the teaching? They're all doing the teaching. But who is the one convincing a lot of the people?
Paul.
Paul is, right? Okay, so Paul wants to go in there. These are friends of his. It's just like if you have friends. And what happens in verse 31?
Stop Paul from going.
Okay, and who were these people that stopped Paul from going? Was it people from Jerusalem? Was it people from Alexandria, Athens? Who was the people? The chief of Asia. That was the ruling people in Ephesus. Evidently, Paul in his teaching reached those people in Ephesus that was in pretty powerful position. And they knew Paul had not blasphemed against Diana. They knew Paul had not been unruly. They knew Paul had not called for insurrection. And they tell him, don't go. They know what the mob is like. They probably have seen the mob before do other terrible things to other people. And they might not agree with Paul's teachings, but they know Paul was a good man, and they would not let him go on. And look in verse 32, their reaction did. Some of the crowd would cry one thing and some another. Is that not what mobs do?
Right.
We've seen that on our TV. We've experienced it. We've seen different trials of different things. And they just come up with crazy, crazy ideas. They're confused. They don't even know why they came together. We're just here. We're just here tearing things up. Okay, we don't really know. It's just fun to do these type of things. People are the same today as they were back then. Now, this guy Alexander comes along. This is they drew Alexander out of the multitude. And who put Alexander forward? The Jews. Now, what happened? Okay, why is a Priscilla and Aquila no longer in Rome?
The Jews were totally.
Caesar had banished them, right? This is a Gentile community, right? Would not word got back? It might have been Nero, I don't know for sure. But whoever the Caesar was that cast the Jews out of Rome. To do that, you'd have to have a pretty good reason, right?
He laid the fire on
you. You have to manufacture a reason.
You're true. You got to manufacture a reason. Did Hitler manufacture a reason to put the Jews and the gypsies and the different people of Europe to death? Did he manufacture a reason? Did Castro manufacture a reason? Did Stalin manufacture a reason? Go ahead.
In 64 AD, there's a huge fire that consumed like two-thirds of Rome. It burned for days on end. And it was said that Nero more than likely started the fire.
Right.
And he blamed it all on Christians. And I would say that was talking about manufacturing a reason.
In politics, when one of your decisions doesn't turn out the way it should turn out, what do you do?
Or it does. That's why you try to divert the blame or the emphasis.
There's very few that the blame stops here. You know?
Yeah.
Harry Truman said the buck stops on his desk. There's a whole lot of politicians that don't do that, right? They blame other people.
That's just people in general.
Huh?
That's just human in general nowadays.
Yeah.
It's always, you know.
It's this one.
Doesn't serve the lesson, or talked a lesson many weeks ago about playing the victim, yeah. Being the victim. We all have a victim mentality, it seems like.
You know, it's like work starts at 8 o'clock. That is something probably my generation is a little bit different from the younger generation's idea on work. And it's interesting. We're going through a transfer through the company right now, and the older guys are kind of out, but we're still around, but the youngers are. But, you know, because I mentioned somebody the other day, work starts at 8 and it ends at 5, okay? That's what. Now, traffic sometimes can be bad, okay? You might get there a little bit late. But traffic is not bad every day, right? Or if it is bad every day, you just have to get up a little bit earlier, or you need to go live in a different place. But it's important to be at work because you have people calling in, you have obligations and all these. You work as a team. So if part of the team's not there, you know, you go to the basketball game. If the center doesn't show up for the basketball game, they're in pretty good shape. Or the guard decides not to show up. But we have to show up because we have a common goal. They bring him forward. But look at verse 34. It says, but when they knew he was, that's why I said there's something racial going on here, because the Jews had been cast out of Rome. But it says, when the mob knew that he was a Jew, what did they do? All with one voice for how long?
2 hours.
2 hours. What did they say?
Great is Diana of the Ephesians.
You know, when it's interesting, when we watch the Olympics sometimes and you see the U.S. doing really well, what is the chant that goes up?
USA.
USA. Aren't we proud? Or if the men's soccer or the women's soccer in the World Cup is doing good and there's Americans there and that chant goes up, USA, USA. Aren't we proud to be an American? Now, you go to a sporting event and say UofL gets fortunate to beat UK in basketball, and you happen to be there, what happens? UofL.
You stay quiet.
UofL. And then we got visitors from Tennessee, so I don't know if they're Vanderbilt fans or they're UT fans, okay? But you know, if Vanderbilt beats UT, I don't know what the Vanderbilt people say. Maybe you can tell us what they say on that. But you know, we get proud. But here they are for 2 hours. Great is Diana. Great is Diana. They're a mob. Okay? Now, are they wearing themselves out?
Yes.
Are they emotion involved in this?
Yes.
And it's in verse 35, who shows up?
The town clerk.
The town clerk. A government official. He's there. Don't you think he's going to be... When there's a riot going on, don't you hope the government officials are there to see what they can do? Don't you hope the police are there or whatever? And he goes, ye men of Ephesus, what man is there that knoweth not how that the city of the Ephesians are worship of the great goddess Diana and of the image that fell down from Jupiter? Here's this rock. We think it's a meteorite. And that's what they said. It fell down from Jupiter. It fell down from the gods. Okay, here it is. How stupid can people be? Now, he's appeasing them here, okay? Seeing that these things cannot be spoken against, it's true. This meteorite, whatever it is, fell from the sky. That's true, okay? Ye cannot be to be quiet and do not nothing rashly. Don't. You guys are getting out of control. He's got to keep the peace. For ye have brought hither, the verse 37, these men, which are neither robbers of churches. Was Paul a robber? Was Gaius a robber? Are they robbers? Nor are the blasphemers of your goddess. Okay, they didn't blaspheme against Diana. They didn't go to the temple and with the bullhorn and say how terrible that is and things like that. They taught privately. They persuaded people. How should we do things when we teach?
Rational.
The same way, right? You reason from the book. You show the evidence.
You should always teach with love.
You do it with love. That's right. You do it with love. Because someone's soul is at stake, right? If your soul was at stake, how do you want somebody to talk to you, right? Anyone come and beat you over the head and say, you know, you're stupid. You can't.
Only someone's soul at stake. The teacher's soul is at stake.
Do what?
The teacher's soul is at stake.
Yeah. Wherefore, if Demetrius and the craftsmen which are with him have a matter against any man, if the silversmiths, if that occupation has a matter of any man, what should they do, he says?
Go to the law.
The law is open. That's why we have laws. We're a nation of laws. If those rioters have a problem with what's going on, you take it to the courts. You don't take matters in your own hand. You take it to the courts, and it'll be adjudicated. And we'll look at the evidence, and we'll see what's happened. But a lot of people today, they don't want to take it to the courts, do they? They want a judgment now. There are deputies. Let them plead one another. But if you've got anything on any other matters, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly. Okay, if you've been done wrong, there's a place for the wrong to be done right. And we have that here. You know, the Greeks, for the most part, had a pretty good form of government there back a long, long time ago. It's lawful. Then in verse 40, what's he talking about? What are they in danger of? But remember, these are the people that are supposed to be keeping the peace, the government officials. What's going to happen if they don't keep the peace? They're going to put a new set of rulers in, right? Aren't they? What happens in this country sometimes? We have elections, right? And we have an opportunity to hold people accountable for the decisions they make. So hopefully people will go out and use that opportunity that we have. If we want to see changes, you can make changes. But we are in danger for this day's uproar. He didn't say riot, but that's what it is. It's interesting. Does this town clerk know how to calm the assembly down?
Well, he's exactly right. And evidently some people in the crowd came to the same conclusion after a couple of hours. And I think what you said a few minutes ago, they are starting to wind down. They're starting to get tired. And he speaks rationally to them.
Whose job is at stake here, possibly?
His job.
Yeah. And he's probably doing everything he can in his power to make sure.
He doesn't want management to come down from Rome and fix things themselves.
But you know, he doesn't sound like, I mean, a clerk. That doesn't sound like that's the main guy.
Well, we need to go see what that word means.
Well, I know, and you could be right, but I mean, nevertheless, this isn't like the mayor, if there was such a position.
Yeah.
Baptist is coming in. This is like a lowly, maybe a lowly, humble clerk, but he's the only guy that's willing to step up, or he's the only guy that's there that's willing to step up.
When the mayor is out of town and something happens in a city, who's going to take over?
Somebody.
His chief of staff or whatever, right?
We'll get into politics, but we're kind of in a similar circumstance here in Louisville. If something like that happened in Louisville, it'd probably be a clerk that would come in.
But anyway, he says, for this day's upward, that there being no cause whereby we may give an account of this concourse. It's even interesting the words he used, concourse, right? It's a riot, that's what it is. But he's trying to get the people calmed down, because it's one thing. Have you ever heard of the term the thin blue line? What's that about?
Police officers.
Can a mob overrule the police?
They can overwhelm the police.
Yeah. If they have no respect for authority, there's more mob people than there is. Look at Sianca this last week? They overthrew the government? And the president had to get out of there, and they showed films of the people there was the police there, and they were just climbing over fences and breaking in and doing all those things. They got upset, and they wanted to change the government, and they're probably going to get their way. And then it says, verse 41, when he had thus spoken, he dismissed the assembly. But Paul, Christianity had changed the culture, okay? It's interesting. Last week, I didn't look at it this week, I forgot to, but last week I thought I'd get a little bit farther along. In Kentucky, there's a big debate about gaming, right? And, you know, we've had church showdowns here for how long, you know? Back when I was growing up, there was only way if you wanted to legally gamble was one way. How was that? Bet on the horses, right? Okay. But it is amazing, because a lot of the people I know, and they're all, why don't Kentucky have casinos and all these things? And I guess they've kind of come in a little bit. But it's amazing the power that the rural senators have in this state, because the majority of people, I think if you put it to a vote, would vote for that, right? But it's kind of how conservative some of the rural senators are in this state. But what I want to bring up is when the governor's father was running for governor in 87 with Wallace Wilkerson, he was against gaming. Wallace was for that, okay? And a lot of people think that Wallace got elected because of that. That appealed to the majority. Well, when our governor's dad ran for governor, guess what he was for? Gaming, okay? And we see this all the time with our politicians. But one way, how did Kentucky support the scholarships for young people going to college?
Lottery.
How was the lottery sold?
It's helping education, help the student.
Okay. So on the webpage last week, I meant to do it this today, they expect, I guess it's this year because they just closed the fiscal year, I think, ended in, they expect $1.8 billion to be wagered on the lottery. 67%, that's from their webpage, 67% goes back to the players, right? You got to give some of it back. If you never give any of it back, they're not going to play. 25% goes to the scholarships for education. It was about, out of $1.8 million, a fourth of that would be, what, $450 million. But that's how that was sold. to do those type of things. So we, you know, states on economic growth, you know, sometimes they do things they shouldn't do just for to have economic growth. Here again, no different today than the people were back here at Ephesus. So our times are getting away. Let's do the next six verses of chapter 20 real fast, and then we'll get the rest of chapter 8. Okay, it says in verse 1 of chapter 20, after the uproar ceased, Paul called unto his disciples and embraced them to depart for to go into Macedonia. And when they had gone over these parts and had given them much exhortation, he came into Greece. And there abode three months. And when the Jews laid wait for him as he was about to sail to Syria, he proposed. If you go over to Corinthians, we won't take the time to do that. We see that what was the saints gathering in the Gentile areas of Corinth, in Ephesus, in Athens? There was distress in Jerusalem, right? And the Gentile, this tells us something. The Jews and the Gentiles was at odds with each other, but here was Gentiles, sending to the Jewish Christians at Jerusalem money. Some think that the reason the Jews was laying in wait for Paul is not only didn't they like Paul, but what would he have with him?
Money.
And you know, they didn't have checks. They didn't have banks back in those days. And then also in chapter 4, it tells all the people, I won't take the time to read all those names, but the thing of it is, there's people from Macedonia, there's people from Galatia, there's also people from Asia. So what this is all these men that's accomplishing Paul, they grew up in different areas of that part of the world. So we see how Christianity was causing people to be united. We're all one under God, aren't we?
Yeah.
Do we have different colors of our skin? Do we have different genders, right? Back at this time, there was free, there were slaves. But under the Christianity, does all those things go away? We're all one. We got one blood. And then in verse 6, it was interesting. It says, and we sailed away. Who is the we? Who's writing the book?
Luke
is writing the book. And maybe he was firsthand some of this here. You go back to the beginning of the gospel in Acts chapter 2. I don't know if Luke was there. Luke was a Gentile, okay? But maybe he heard these things. But here in verse 6, it's just interesting. It says, we, now he is with Paul, and he's going to with Paul be back to one thing. One thing I wanted to point out, and I forgot to, over in 1 Corinthians 15:32, Paul says, in Ephesus, we fought against wild beasts. I meant to mention that. That talks about the situation. Okay, David.
Well, you know, just this demonstration of charity. This might have been the first time anything like this has ever happened. You know, I mean, I find it hard to believe that a group of people, say, 500 or 600 or 700 miles away from another place that's suffering a famine or an earthquake or something like that,
would
send a significant amount of money to help those people. Now, we do that today because communications is so much better, and we get the news almost immediately. But for them to do this at this time, this might have been the first time that something like this had ever happened.
But even
to people you never met, you're concerned about, you love people that you never even met.
But sometimes there's people we know that say, here's the Christian church or Christians in wherever, and they have this need because of the flood, because of hurricane, because of fire, because of economics, because of whatever, war, and those type of things. And because of someone that we know and trust, and they say, these are good people, and they need help. As a Christian, what are we going to do?
And people outside the church would maybe see this and really be impressed by that, about the concern that these people have for this group over here.
And when you're the receiver of that, what does that tell you about Christian brethren in other places?
That they love you and they're concerned for you.
They love you and they're concerned. And it's what? It's more blessed to give than to receive. It's good for us to do that too. So I think our time's about up. We'll start with the rest of chapter 20, and we'll go on as Paul's on the way to Jerusalem, and then he's on the way to Rome.